Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you, wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. So, when we picture the inside of a biological cell, I think it's, you know, incredibly tempting to imagine this beautifully orderly, peaceful environment.
Right, yeah. Like everything perfectly in its place.
Exactly. Moving along neat little tracks. But, I mean, the reality is completely different. The inside of a cell is absolute chaos. It's this dense, hyper-packed soup of floating molecules, proteins, and genetic material just constantly slamming into one another at lightning speed.
It functions much like a, well, like a microscopic mosh pit, really.
Yeah.
The sheer density of information and material moving around in that confined space is staggering. And there's no air traffic control or directing traffic, right?
Yeah, none at all.
Molecules are just relying on physical collisions to get where they need to go.
Which sets up one of the wildest mysteries in molecular biology, in my opinion. Amidst all those thousands of different floating molecules colliding in the dark, certain strands of RNA somehow manage to magically find exact copies of themselves.
Mm-hmm. And they lock together to form these exclusive homogeneous clusters. The biological term for this is homotypic clustering.
Right. And to give you a sense of how impossible this sounds, imagine having a massive stadium-sized bowl filled with millions of M&Ms and you're blindfolded.
Okay, that's a lot of M&Ms.
Yeah.
Right.
And somehow you manage to reach in and pull out only the red ones over and over again without ever seeing what you are grabbing.
It completely defies our basic intuition of probability. I mean, these RNA molecules don't have eyes. They don't have brains or tiny tracking devices emitting a signal.
Exactly. They're just complex chemical chains.
Yeah. And yet, they effortlessly distinguish self from non-self in this ocean of microscopic lookalikes.
It's kind of like being at a crowded, incredibly dark party where the music is absolutely blaring. You can't see anyone, you can't hear anyone, but somehow all the people with hyper-specific interests, like, I don't know, left-handed underwater basket weavers, perfectly grouped together in the corner without ever shouting a single word.
That is a very specific party.
Right. But how does that happen? What really happens when two identical microscopic strands collide in the dark? And, you know, how could solving this change our entire understanding of biology's hidden organization?
Well, that underlying mechanics of self-recognition is the puzzle we're unpacking today. We're taking a deep dive into the physical forces that allow molecules to find their clones.
Today, we celebrate the work of Ofer Kimchi, Kira Mitchell, Andrew G.T. Pyo, Ned S. Wingreen, and Elizabeth R. Gavis from New York University's Curran Institute and Princeton University, who have advanced our understanding of RNA self-assembly.
Yeah, the scope of their cross-institutional collaboration is truly remarkable. This was published in the highly prestigious journal PNAS, The Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, on April 3, 2026, and edited by James L. Manley.
Awesome.
And this research tackles the problem by really breaking down disciplinary walls. It takes mathematics, thermodynamics, physics, and molecular biology, and weaves them all together to solve a mechanism that no single field could explain on its own.
Which is so cool. And to really appreciate the magnitude of this, we need to talk about phase separation, because for a long time, the textbook picture of a cell was basically a water balloon filled with solid organelles, like the nucleus or the mitochondria, which are wrapped in their own protective membranes.
Right, but that view has completely shifted over the last decade or so.
Mm-hmm.
Science has realized that cells also create these dynamic condensates made of RNAs and proteins.
Okay, condensates.
Yeah. If you picture oil drops forming in water, when you shake up a bottle of salad dressing, you have the right visual. These tiny droplets spontaneously form and dissolve based on what the cell needs in that exact moment.
Wow, so it allows the cell to create localized, highly organized compartments without needing to build permanent physical membranes.
Exactly. And a perfect natural laboratory for studying this is the Drosophila melanogaster embryo, which is just the scientific name for the common fruit fly.
Oh, the good old fruit fly, the unsung hero of genetics.
Truly, for over a century now, inside the posterior of these embryos, there are specific condensates called germ granules. And their job is vital. They literally induce the formation of germ cells, meaning they specify the fate of the fly's entire future reproductive system.
But if we zoom in on those granules, they aren't just a randomly mixed up soup of ingredients, right?
Not at all. Inside them, specific messenger RNAs, or mRNAs, namely two distinct ones called nanos and PGC, form these homotypic clusters.
So the nanos copies somehow segregate themselves to only group with other nanos copies.
Yes, and the PGC copies only group with other PGC copies. You end up with these incredibly pure clusters ranging from just two RNA strands up to several dozen.
And we see this homotypic clustering far beyond the fruit fly, don't we?
We do. It happens in zebrafish, it happens in C. elegans nematodes, and we even see it when we engineer synthetic cells. It's a fundamental generic feature of how biology organizes itself.
Okay, hold on. I'm getting stuck here. You're telling me this clustering is generic-like, happening everywhere across all these different species and sequences, but it is also strictly sequence-specific.
I know, it sounds counterintuitive.
It feels like total contradiction. If nanos only binds to nanos, shouldn't there be a biological zip code or a unique tag on the RNA? How can a behavior be totally generic and highly specific at the same time?
That is the exact question.
Especially since past experiments proved no single part of the nano sequence is solely responsible for this clustering. If you cut out a piece, it still finds its twins, so what is actually driving this?
That tension between a generic behavior and sequence-specific sorting is exactly what baffled the field. The researchers realized that simply reading the letters of the genetic code wasn't going to provide the answer.
Right.
To resolve a physical contradiction, you have to look at the physics. RNA isn't a stiff, straight line of code. It's a highly flexible polymer that folds back on itself into elaborate three-dimensional shapes.
So they needed to observe how these complex shapes physically interact, which meant turning to computational modeling.
Exactly. This was primarily an in silico study. The team utilized a sophisticated software tool called NewPack. Its primary function is to calculate the thermodynamics of RNA folding and binding.
Okay, thermodynamics.
Specifically, it calculates free energy. In biology, molecules are inherently lazy. They always seek out the lowest possible energy state to achieve chemical stability.
You're like water flowing downhill.
Right. It's very much like a ball rolling down a bumpy hill. It will naturally come to rest in the deepest valley it can find. NewPack helps map out those valleys for RNA.
Got it. So they needed to mathematically figure out what makes the nanos and PGC sequences so special compared to the rest of the genetic noise in the cell.
Right.
So they established a control group. They took the target sequences, nanos and PGC, and ran them against roughly 100 randomly selected Drosophila mRNAs of similar lengths. They wanted to see what makes the cluster formers unique compared to the everyday RNAs floating around.
And the way they simulated these interactions was a major leap forward. Standard molecular modeling usually focuses on equilibrium states.
Which means?
That represents the ultimate, most stable configuration where two molecules have had all the time in the world to settle into their perfect, lowest energy connection. But the researchers pushed further and modeled out of equilibrium binding.
Which makes sense, considering that microscopic mosh pit we talked about earlier. In a living cell, things are moving too fast. Molecules don't have the luxury of perfectly untangling themselves and slowly wrapping around each other.
Precisely. Previous physical experiments had already demonstrated that these nanos RNAs clump together without actually unraveling their internal folded structures.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, out of equilibrium modeling simulates that initial rapid collision. It asks the software, what happens when two already folded, tangled up RNAs violently bump into each other in the cytoplasm?
Let me put this into a real world perspective for a second. Imagine equilibrium binding is like a long, perfectly planned, formal handshake. You approach, you make eye contact, you both extend your right arms at the perfect angle, and you grip hands.
Nice and proper.
Right. It takes time, space, and coordination. But out of equilibrium binding is like a quick high five in a busy hallway as you're rushing past each other. It only works if both people's hands are already free and accessible.
Exactly.
If your hand is buried in your pocket, you completely miss the high five, no matter how much you want to connect.
That's a perfect analogy. And taking that hand in the pocket concept into the math, the researchers captured this using a specific parameter called P-free. This metric represents the probability that a specific binding region on the RNA is structurally exposed to the outside world rather than being folded inward and bonded to another part of its own sequence.
Ah, okay. So if the P-free value is high, the hand is out of the pocket and ready for a high five.
Yes. And they paired this accessibility metric with wait times, calculating how long an initial, hasty bond can hold together before the chaotic thermal energy of the cell rips it apart.
So they run these massive simulations, tracking all these high fives across the 100 random RNAs and the special cluster-forming RNAs.
Mm-hmm.
And they uncover the mechanism that completely solves the zip code paradox. It all comes down to palindromes.
Yes. Now, to clarify, when we talk about palindromes in normal language, we think of words like race car or level that read the same forwards and backwards. But in RNA architecture, a palindrome is a self-complementary stretch of sequence.
Meaning the bases pair up?
Right. RNA bases pair up following strict rules. G binds with C and A binds with U. So a palindromic sequence is one that serves as its own perfect chemical match.
For example, if you have an exposed RNA stretch that reads 5' GCAUGC3', its perfect chemical partner is another strand reading exactly GCAUGC in the opposite direction.
The C hits the G, the A hits the U, and they zip together perfectly.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because the palindrome matches itself, the perfect partner for that segment is guaranteed to be on an identical copy of the RNA.
Exactly.
You don't need a complex biological zip code or a unique tracking tag. If your surface is covered in palindromes, the puzzle piece that fits you best in the entire cell is your exact twin.
It elegantly resolves the entire paradox. It explains how self-recognition is generic, because palindromes can be formed by literally any sequence of bases as long as they complement themselves, while remaining completely sequence-specific, because only an identical RNA molecule will feature matching palindromes positioned at the exact same accessible spots along its 3D structure.
Wow. Let's look at the actual data from the model, because the statistical findings are fascinating. When the researchers simulated short, random sequences of RNA colliding, what did they find regarding their preference for binding?
The numbers were striking. Random strands containing palindromes were twice as likely to form homodimers, meaning identical twins binding together, than heterodimers, which is when two completely different sequences bind.
Twice as likely.
Yeah. But the real proof of the mechanism came when the team mathematically deleted all the palindromes from the simulation.
Oh, wow. What happened?
Without palindromes, the preference flipped entirely. The RNAs actually preferred to bind with different non-identical sequences.
Wait, really? Why would removing the palindromes make them prefer strangers?
Think back to the concept of free energy and the ball rolling down the hill. An RNA molecule with exposed sticky bases wants to cover them up to achieve chemical stability. If it doesn't possess a palindrome to guarantee a rapid, perfect lock with its identical clone, it just grabs on to whatever complementary bases happen to float by. It settles for a patchwork, good enough connection with a stranger, simply to lower its energy state.
That makes so much sense.
The palindromes are the specific magnetic force that overrides that settling behavior and drives homotypic clustering.
So how did our specific fruit fly RNAs, nanos, and PDC stack up against those 100 random control mRNAs? I'm guessing they must be absolutely covered in palindromes compared to the average fly RNA.
The out-of-equilibrium modeling confirmed exactly that.
Yeah.
While the average fly RNA preferred to mix and match with different sequences, settling for those patchwork connections, nanos and PDC fiercely preferred their own kind.
Wow.
And the math showed their P-free values, their accessibility, were exceptionally high. For these RNAs, the probability of their palindromes being exposed and ready was greater than or equal to 10 to the negative 1.
Which means they have a 1 in 10 chance of being wide open at any given millisecond. In molecular time, that is a massive, highly accessible target.
It is. And when those specific palindromes do connect, they hold on with incredible force. The simulations showed binding energies around negative 12.5 kilocalories per mole for nanos.
That sounds intense.
To put that metric in perspective, that's akin to a molecular superglue. It is a drastically stronger bond than the weak, temporary connections formed by average RNAs, which barely stick together before breaking apart again.
And this also perfectly explains that earlier mystery, where past experiments showed that no single part of the nano sequence is solely responsible for clustering.
Right.
The palindromes are redundant. Nanos is peppered with multiple strong, accessible palindromes all over its structure. If a researcher deletes one region, there are plenty of other palindromes left to catch the high fives and facilitate the clustering.
Exactly. And building on that, this redundancy framework beautifully explains one of the most bizarre experiments previously conducted in this field.
Oh.
Scientists once took a completely different, unrelated RNA, the GFP mRNA, which simply produces a green fluorescent protein, and they spliced the tail end of the nano's mRNA onto it.
Okay. Frankenstein RNA?
Yeah. And suddenly, this hybrid GFP RNA began forming its own separate homotypic clusters within the fly embryo.
Because by attaching that nanose tail, they were physically importing highly active nanose palindromes into the GFP sequence.
Precisely.
And the GFP RNA probably already had a few of its own unique palindromes hidden in its sequence. When you combine those with the super sticky nanose tail, it created a brand new, completely distinct, self-recognizing molecule.
Yeah, the hybrid RNA found its own unique valleys of free energy. It is a stunning validation of the computer model.
Okay, so nature has this elegant, mathematically beautiful palindrome trick for fruit flies. But biology rarely invents a trick that good and only uses it once, right? Are we seeing the same generic rule causing phase separation in other areas, like human medicine? What are the broader implications here?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the implications stretch across evolutionary biology and clinical medicine. From an evolutionary standpoint, if palindromes are the master key to RNA phase separation, then the palindrome content within an organism's genetic code is under intense evolutionary selection pressure.
Meaning nature is actively managing them.
Right. Nature is essentially acting as a molecular gardener. It actively hoards palindromes within a sequence when it wants an RNA to phase separate and form functional condensates. Conversely, it ruthlessly prunes palindromes out of a sequence when it needs an RNA to remain solitary and avoid clumping.
And when that evolutionary pruning process fails in humans, the results can be devastating. Because RNA phase separation isn't just about healthy cell organization, is it?
Unfortunately, no. It is heavily implicated in severe medical conditions, particularly repeat expansion disorders.
Like what?
Taking that further into the clinical realm, diseases like amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, ALS, or Huntington's disease are characterized by stuttering genetic code. Certain RNA sequences repeat over and over.
Oh, I see.
What happens is that these stutters accidentally create massive, highly accessible palindrome factories. Instead of forming healthy, temporary liquid droplets, the mutant RNAs become hypersticky. They form solid, toxic aggregates that choke the neurons.
Wow. Which means understanding this generic self-recognition rule is a massive step forward. Because if we know that exposed palindromes are the exact physical mechanism driving this toxic clumping, researchers can start designing targeted therapies.
Exactly.
You could potentially engineer small molecules to cap or block those specific palindromes, dissolving the toxic condensates without harming the normal healthy RNA floating around the cell.
It provides a clear physical target for drug design. However, as with any foundational discovery, we have to recognize the limitations of a current study.
Right, there's always a catch.
This entire breakthrough relies on in silico modeling. And frankly, current computational tools still struggle to accurately predict the vast, intricate 3D structures of very long RNAs inside the messy environment of living cells.
Yeah, the cell is just too chaotic and RNA strands are too long and tangled for our current software to perfectly simulate every single fold, tuck, and interaction.
The research team actually observed this limitation in their own data. When they ran their exact same models on other species of fruit flies, specifically Drosophila virilis and Drosophila pseudobscura, the predictions for the PGC mRNA held up beautifully.
But the nanos ones didn't.
Right. The predictions for the nanos mRNA were much noisier and less clean than they were for the common fruit fly. The authors noted this discrepancy is almost certainly due to software limitations in calculating that critical P-free accessibility parameter for exceptionally long, complex RNAs across different evolutionary lineages. The math just gets too heavy.
So how do we move this out of the computer and definitively prove the model in the real messy biological world?
The next logical step, which the authors suggest, is to conduct physical in vitro experiments using synthetically engineered RNAs. Design one set of RNAs to have absolutely zero palindromes, ensuring they only have random exposed bases. Then you design another set to be loaded with completely unoccluded, perfectly accessible palindromes. If the computational framework is correct, the first set won't cluster at all, no matter how dense the soup gets, while the second set will aggressively phase separate into pure droplets.
Which brings up a wildly fascinating possibility for synthetic biology. If cells are actively selecting for palindromes over millions of years, could we eventually use this to write our own synthetic RNA code that self-assembles exactly where we want it inside a human patient?
It's entirely possible.
Imagine designing an mRNA drug or vaccine that forms protective, highly concentrated clusters exactly where they're needed, simply by engineering the right palindromes into its sequence.
That is the technological frontier this opens up. We move from just observing how biology organizes itself to knowing the physical rules well enough to actively engineer our own cellular structures.
It is incredible how a mechanism so beautifully simple can drive such a complex, seemingly impossible biological phenomenon. To bring all of these concepts together for you, RNA molecules solve the complex problem of distinguishing self from non-self in a crowded, chaotic cell by utilizing palindromic sequences, which physically favor homotypic clustering.
Right, it provides a wonderfully elegant, sequence-specific solution to a generic biological behavior.
Exactly. What does this mean for the future of engineering synthetic biomolecules and targeting RNA-based diseases?
It's a question we'll be watching closely.
Absolutely. This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base. On bright screens, I watch the letters fold. A quiet code in a heat-lit glow. Some strands drift out. Some hold their own, like finding your face in a window's tone. Not every handshake fits the same. Some bonds are lightning, some are flame. A hidden symmetry calls my name and pulls me close without a friend. Palindrome, you're my mirror word magnet. Clicking in place when the world gets static. Self to self, you make it all. Stack it. We think